This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Welcome, everybody, to FilmWax Radio, episode number 208. This is Adam Shartoff, your host. Thank you for listening. I thank you for streaming the show today. This is the special live episode I did a couple of weeks back at Videology. It went off really well. You know, we had, of course, a couple of technical hurdles just trying to figure this out. It was our first time doing it, and you know, as many things as we anticipated, a couple of things, of course, ended up going a little bit awry, very minor, but there's a small section that's cut out a little bit at the beginning of Gillian Robespierre's appearance. So I apologize to Gillian and to the Obvious Child folks. I'm hoping to have Gillian on, and hopefully maybe even a couple of the actors from the film as their Rooftop Films screening and their theatrical approach. And the sound is it could be improved, so we're going to work on those things, basically. That's about it. I mean, otherwise, you can certainly hear the whole thing, and parts of it you'll hear the sound maybe gets a little bit sketchy at times. Again, I'll be working and focusing on those issues for the future when we do more of these, and we are going to do more of these. On this panel is Dan Nuxall from, you know, who is the programming director of Rooftop Films, announcing the some of the highlights coming up with the 2014 summer season. Since we did the recording of the live podcast and today, where I'm putting it up, the press releases have come out regarding the slate. So nothing in here is technically news-breaking, but you know, we're able to talk a little bit more about venues and other things like that, which are you know, not covered in the press release, as well as a few of the films that are programmed this summer. After Dan, the filmmakers come up. First is Owner, who just premiered his new film, Summer of Blood, at the Tribeca Film Festival. We had a couple of screenings where I did the Q&A, and Owner, with bubbles popping above his head, you know, entertained the audience. And we had a really good time. I also got to see a lot of old friends who came by to the various screenings of Summer of Blood. It was a delight. Then after Owner, we have Desiree Akhavan, or Desi Akhavan, from the filmmaker who made Appropriate Behavior. And so she's coming on. Her film will be at Rooftop Films, as well as our last guest, which is Gillian Robespierre, who, again, made Obvious Child. And that, too, will be premiering at Rooftop Films. I should say that, too, will be screening at Rooftop Films on the opening weekend. So I think that's probably on May 17th, but check the Rooftop Films website and calendar for more details as that time comes up. As mid-May gets closer, I will I'll fill you guys in a bit more on that. So anyway, I've thanked everybody at the you'll hear in the beginning of the recording that's involved, so I'm not going to do that, but I did want to make a special shout out to those filmmakers who came out and thank them for coming, and also to New Amsterdam Vodka & Gin for sponsoring the event. It really was a great event, and in no small part to our sponsor, and to everybody over at Rooftop Films again for being so helpful and helping me kick off this very first live podcast. So without any further ado, here is our first FilmWax Radio live podcast, and I'll be back afterwards. Welcome. Thanks, everybody. Welcome. It's a beautiful thing seeing all these very friendly, lovely people in front of me. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I appreciate it. This is the FilmWax Radio, our first live, my first live podcast. So forgive in advance any of my flubs, but I appreciate your coming out for it, and your support means a lot, so thank you very much. Let's start off with a round of applause for me for doing this. No, I'm kidding around, of course. I have... We'll edit out the line right before that. And let me. Okay, so I just wanted to start off by thanking some people. We'll get that out of the way. Of course, we'll thank the sponsor, get that out of the way. Thank you to New Amsterdam for supplying our beverages, our complimentary drinks tonight. Thank you very much, New Amsterdam, vodka and gin. I want to thank Team Rooftop Films, first of all. Considering they're gearing up, literally May 16th is their kickoff event, which is only weeks away. And so I really appreciate squeezing this event in. It was really great to work on this together with this group of people, including, of course, the director of programming, Dan Nuxel, Kristen Malloy, Kate Galeen, and Tristan Shepard, and everybody else. I hope I didn't leave anybody else who did work so on this, but I think that's the core team. So thank you all to those guys at Rooftop Films. Also, I wanted to thank the folks here at Videology, including Austin Kim and Wendy Chamberlain and James Leitz for helping make this possible. And lastly, absolutely. And lastly, I want to thank the folks that help out with my podcast. Herbert Gamble has been a tremendous help the last year with a lot of the technical side of what I'm trying to do. And been devoting a lot of his time gratis, and I appreciate Herbert's work. Thank you, Herbert. Justin Levy is here. Thank you for helping today. Betty Kaplan, who helps at various podcasts, who has a new short. We're gonna get behind her new short. She's a filmmaker. Harrison Bender, who's been very helpful to me over the last months. And Kevin Davidson, who is behind the camera over there today, helping to with this. So thank you, everybody. Thank everybody. Thank you again. Thank you guys for coming out. So let's get right into it. I just want to mention a couple things. We do have a sign-up list. So if you're not currently subscribing to the podcast, it's called Film Wax Radio. You can get it on iTunes, and you can also, of course, find it on the Rooftop Films website. So sign it. If you put your email there, we'll keep you abreast of everything that's going on with the podcast and everything else. And if you want, also, if you're not on the Rooftop Films email list, you could also, we'll use that for getting you on their newsletter as well and find out what, speaking of Rooftop Films, I wonder what is going on this summer. It's like springtime, as we can attest to outside, and I'm wondering what the heck is going to happen this summer, what films are going to be there, and I wish I had a better idea of it, but Dan Nuxel is standing over there, and he's in charge, so maybe he knows something. Dan Nuxel, director of programming for Rooftop Films. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Stay way down there so we can see each other.
Yeah, what do you think is the best seating arrangement here? Should I get really close? Because that's almost as awkward.
It is awkward. This whole... That's not awkward at all.
Does it seem appropriate?
No, it's fine.
If you put four chairs in a row, like, there's no way two people can look normal.
Right. There's nobody that should be sitting in a restaurant like this.
No. You know,
even if you're in love. And you can't sit close enough. Now, where do you go from there? I think that's awkward. Dan, thank you for coming, and I have no idea what you're going to say, so this is not scripted at all. I don't know what's on that piece of paper. Rooftop Films has been going on for 18 years.
This will be our 18th year, yeah.
Congratulations. 18 years of underground films and unique places.
Underground movies outdoors is our slogan.
Unless it's raining.
Unless it's raining.
But,
that's not on the actual logo, but yeah.
No. And it's not going to be in the weather forecast this year either. You're going to have a lot of great weather this summer. After all that snow. Seriously, though, this is an opportunity to talk about the new season. Let's get right into it.
Yeah.
As I said, May 16th is the first Day, right? It's coming up in just a few weeks.
Yep, we'll be kicking off May 16th. That'll be our opening night. We always start off with a program of short films, so it'll be a great collection of short films from all over the world. Of course, we'll have live music beforehand, a big party afterwards with our sponsors, our new gin and vodka sponsors, New Amsterdam, serving free drinks at all of our parties this year. And it'll be a big, great, fun party, kicking it off. There you go. And then the rest of that weekend, we've got some other great stuff happening that weekend as well. First of all, that opening night will be at Industry City, which is our new main venue. So we did a couple of screenings there last year, which were really great. It's an amazing spot. We do screenings on the roof, and then when the roof sells out, we'll have more seating in the courtyard below as well. So it's a really incredible industrial complex out there, which is really going places.
In Sunset Park,
yeah. So Not too much further past like McCann Factory where we will still be doing screenings. So we'll be opening that weekend with our short film program, and then the following day we'll be showing The Obvious Child. So we'll be doing a screening of that, which is a fantastic, fantastic movie. We'll have Gillian, the filmmaker, up here just in a little bit to talk about that film as well. So that's how we're kicking off.
So do you have a number of films here, or are you still working on that? I mean, what was the number last year?
Yeah, well, we'll do about 30 feature films. So we're not announcing all of them today, but we'll be announcing a couple of them today, and then we'll be announcing the rest later this week.
Right. So this is these are fairly arbitrary. It's just like it takes a lot of...
totally picked out of a hat.
Well, I mean, in the sense that they've worked out sooner than others. Films. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of involved in just scheduling a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're still locking some films in, so we're still figuring out the final programming for it. But yeah, we've locked a good number of our feature films.
Was this a good year for? I mean,
it's a great year. I mean, it's an interesting year in indie film. I think the fiction this year has been fantastic. I mean, at all the festivals I've been to, the fiction this year has been, especially American fiction, I think it's been stronger than it's been in years. Sundance and South By were just filled with really, really good fiction films. I think the docs are maybe, I mean, I love the docs we're showing. We've had a run of just so many years of just incredible docs, so many great docs the last several years. I don't think there's as many out there in the world this year that are really exceptional as in some past years. But I think that, you know, the stuff we're showing up, of course, I'm very excited about. But.
Great. Again, May 16th. In Industry City, has a lot of people have been to Industry City? Do you know what this place is like? It's great. It's a great place to. And what I like is you're sort of slowly working your way down south. There's almost like as all of us folks that can't afford the rents keep going further south, point south in Brooklyn. So too does Rooftop Films.
Well, it's always it's definitely always been part of what we do is. Partly out of necessity, but also, partly because we like to bring people to places that they wouldn't find out about otherwise. You know, when we first started, we were in Bushwick, and that was 18 years ago, and there were no arts events in Bushwick or anything resembling that. So people were usually pretty terrified walking to our screenings when we first started out there. We moved, but our screenings were great. And, I mean, our audience, I think, is, like, really excited about checking out new spots and finding out about, new neighborhoods or buildings that they've heard about but haven't obviously been in or on top of. So, doing that with Industry City and some of the other locations. We've got a bunch of other venues that I'm really excited about, too. So, including, we're going to be doing screenings do you guys know the organization Brooklyn Grange? They've got a farm, rooftop farm in Queens, and they have a new one that they just opened last year in the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
What do they have in Queens?
It's a rooftop farm. Oh. So it's like a massive, at the time it was, I think maybe there's like a bigger one in somewhere else now, but it was at the time the biggest rooftop farm in the world. The one in the Navy Yard is even bigger. It's amazing, and it's got wraparound views. You can see all of Brooklyn and Manhattan in every direction. So it's in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, huge, great roof with it completely covered with crops except for the one area where we'll be showing movies. But so we'll be doing some screenings there, including the New York premiere of Sarah Dose's film The Last Season. And that's a film about mushroom pickers, so we'll do a little mushroom hunt on the roof as well beforehand.
What's scary is I know of another indie film about mushroom picking. Is that somebody who's like spends way too much time watching independent films?
There's a few mushroom hunter documentaries.
Phew, then I'm not that bad. Okay, good. How did you find that venue?
We had done some screenings with them on the Queens roof out there in years past, and this roof is even better suited because we can do more people up there because they've got an area that's a little more open for doing screenings. So We had done some screenings in the past. The place opened. There's actually a short film about the rooftop farm that we'll be showing as well, which is produced by Ben Neighbors, but it's really, really beautiful doc about the whole process of building a farm on a roof, which is difficult, as you might imagine. So we've got that venue. We'll be doing some of our venues from previous years are coming back. So we'll be doing stuff at the Old American Can Factory. We'll be doing even more screenings at Brookfield Place, which used to be World Financial Center down in Lower Manhattan. Yep. So we did Brasslands there last year. We'll be doing three screenings back to back to back this year, and those screenings are massive. We do it with the big screen.
Do they have that whole interactive aspect to the event where you have you mentioned Brasslands last year, which involved the huge brass band.
Four brass bands we had.
Four
for that
brass
one,
bands,
actually, yeah.
A huge concert and everything else, but... worked out something on that scale yet, or are you still?
Yeah, we're going to be doing, I can't announce it just yet, but yes, we've got something on that
scale. That's an answer.
It's not four brass bands. I don't know if I'm ever going to choose to do that again, but it was fun.
Seven brass bands.
Yeah. But we'll be doing some things like that, and, of course, we do a lot of different types of activations, special events with tied to the screening, so we'll be doing something similar along those lines on a smaller scale with a documentary called Mateo, which was at South by Southwest, really beautiful, kind of dark documentary, actually, about this singer-songwriter who writes and performs these beautiful Cuban love song style recordings. And then whenever he's not recording this beautiful, lovely music, he's walking the streets of Havana looking for prostitutes. It's an interesting film. But we're going to have...
Well, where do you think it's his inspiration? I mean...
They are. That's the movie. So he'll be... The performer, the subject of that film will be out to perform. So he'll be performing beforehand, and then afterwards be making his way around the audience at the after party, serenading people, not prostitutes, presumably. I mean, if there's a prostitute there, he might serenade them. But so we'll be doing
so
that.
So you're listening in, and you're a prostitute.
Yeah, that's the screening to go to. It's the only screening where we will have someone perform just for you.
Okay.
We've got a bunch of other really fun films that we're playing. I mentioned Obvious Child, a couple of other films that have played at other festivals like Sundance. We've got a couple of the bigger hits from those festivals, including Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is, if you guys haven't seen that film yet, you have to come to our screening. That is absolutely one of my favorite independent films of the last several years. It's
with the exception of the three that we're going to talk about tonight. But I would agree that is really, I saw the new directors and it blew me away.
Yeah, it's really, she's an incredible talent, and it's a vampire spaghetti western set in Iran. About a skateboarding vampire.
But shot in L.A.
But shot outside of L.A., yeah. So, yeah, I don't know that the Iranian government would have approved this particular permit. The movie's absolutely astonishing, so we're really excited for that. We'll do, a creepy dance party after that as well. And we're going to be doing a world premiere of a film called Thanksgiving, which Adam Newport Barra directed. Beautiful film, obviously hasn't played anywhere yet, so most of you haven't seen it. But really fantastic film, Brooklyn drama, really tremendous performances about a sort of love triangle. So we're really excited about that one as well. We've got, what else? What are the other exciting things? I mentioned the last season. We'll be doing, our South by Southwest weekend. So we'll be showing three hits from South by Southwest in New York in July. So we'll be announcing all those films a little bit later. But
when does the full schedule get announced?
We'll be announcing,
ideally.
Yeah, end of next week. So we'll be sending everything out then. Or at least the feature films will all be announced then. And then the short films a little bit after that. So if you haven't heard back from us, there's a reason. We're not done yet. So don't be mad at me. So that's some of the big stuff, and we'll be doing a big free screening of selections, short films from Sundance, so we're partnering with them again, and we'll have some of the programmers out and filmmakers out for the Sundance Shorts program, and we go through till August 16th, which we'll be announcing our closing weekend films, but we'll have some really big movies in our closing weekend as well, so I'm excited to announce those next week.
I mentioned at the beginning that I would make flubs, and I in between some of the more inspirational things you've been saying, I've been remembering things I should have said at the beginning, like, for instance, who the guests are, but it's okay, that's part, the other guests, I should say, that's all right, there's part two, you know who they are anyway, everybody here knows who's coming up, but it's just for the record, we'll have on in a few moments, we're going to bring up Arnor Tekel, who's the director of Summer of Blood, and another... He's here, my friend, Arnor Tekel. And then we're going to have Desiree Akhavan, who has the film Appropriate Behavior. And also Gillian Robespierre with her film Obvious Child. So we're, it's a really, yeah. Now, having said that, there is a bit of a, it doesn't imply or not imply that, you know, these films are a rooftop. This is like, these were kind of cherry-picked, guess my, it was my wish list from the films I've seen over the last few months of some of the, my favorites of the, that have been coming out recently. With the exception of Orner's film, which is you're having your premiere just in a week, whereas I think the other two films have had their world premieres or more local premieres. Yeah, oh yeah, we're gonna at some point we'll also open it up and you guys can ask questions. I should have said that as well. Whether it's even to, of course, to Dan, he'll stick around. So if you have questions about, we'll take them in a couple. We have already an eager. Oh, what the hell? Do you have a question for Dan? Or for me?
Hey, Dad.
Yes.
If you had a choice, now that we've got a new mayor, what would you
choose? Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, so repeat the question.
The roof I most want in the world, or in New York City.
Then we can move on to the world, too.
Yeah.
Taj Mahal.
I don't know. Yeah, we've explored a lot of these things. It hadn't occurred to me that maybe de Blasio would be easier to convince than Bloomberg to like give us the roof of the Port Authority or something like that. But maybe he would be. You know, he lives in the neighborhood. So that's a good question. I should know the answer to that. The
I want the Port Authority because I want to be the first one to publicly urinate
they
on
do.
It. No,
wow.
That was a very mixed response, but. It's the only spot in the Port Authority that hasn't.
I think
been.
You, if de Blasio listens to this podcast, I think you just ruined our chances of getting that room. They actually do. The Port Authority actually is a roof I'd love to use. It's such a weird, dirty place, but they do actually like once a year they open up the roof and just like let kids like run around and like fly kites on it. Yeah, they've done it a couple of times, and it's a really surreal picture.
He has like a Google alert for rooftops. You know, like anything that's related to a rooftop, he knows about it. I guess
that's actually
I don't
true.
Know how you find that out.
I would think the roof of the Port Authority is pretty good. There's the roof of the Ford Foundation is really amazing. We've been working on that one for a long time, but it's been under construction. But it's such a cool, weird spot. It's like so high up, it's still surrounded by even taller skyscrapers. That's always one I really liked. Some of the roofs that I like most we've gotten. You know, the Brooklyn Grange roof is astonishingly beautiful, and it's kind of a surreal experience being up there, sort of surrounded by the industrial buildings around, and then the water on the other side. It's really cool. So you should all come out and check out that roof for sure. We'll be doing probably three screenings there this summer. So.
And you have events in all five boroughs, right? Is that
we do, yeah.
Summer,
so we'll be doing all five boroughs with screenings. Yeah. So we'll be doing one screening in Staten Island and then more in other places. Yeah.
You threw him a bone, or where is it going to be in Staten Island?
We do it. We're doing it in the stadium, the baseball stadium by the water. So we did a couple of screenings there a couple of years ago, and we'll be doing another one this year. So,
oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Dan Uxel, everybody. Let's give a nice round of applause. Thank you. So now you can...
Slide down.
Now we'll start the show proper. This was the Rooftop Films section of the evening, but now we're going to start with the our filmmaker guests. Okay, so yeah, move down. Go ahead.
I was going to stand and shake Orner's hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a good idea. See, you're even better at this than I am. All right, so my first guest here, and I'm going to stay away from these, like, talk show tropes, like, the pencil bit and this thing that I just did. Orner Chakel is a Brooklyn-based filmmaker, but he is from North Carolina. And he has made six feature films. So, and let's see, I'm going to wing this one because you are been in Brooklyn now for about 3 years, 3.5 years. And he has now just recently finished his second feature that he shot in New York, specifically, yeah, in New York. And the first one was called Richard's Wedding, which he made not long ago. And now he has a new film called Summer Blood, and it's going to premiere. It's going to have its world premiere at Tribeca Film Festival on April 17th. That is a major, and it's worthy of that. I saw it. It's a comedy. We'll bring him up to talk about it right now. Orner, come on up here and tell us about your new film. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. You've been on, actually, well, he also has a distinction of, I think, you've been on the show now, officially, maybe more times.
Yeah, I cast Adam Chartoff in Richard's Wedding, that's the first movie I made here. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I get like the guy impressed here.
It's which not.
He's really good in the movie. I know that's not completely true. If the movie
I was not in Summer of Blood, so.
But if the movie would have been really bad, you probably wouldn't have, you know. So Richard's Wedding is a really fun movie, and I moved here about 3.5 years ago on Halloween 2010 after being in North Carolina my whole life, and it's really nice 3.5 years later to be showing a horror comedy in Tribeca. So it's really cool, and to get to know you and to be on the show, which is great. It's a terrific turnout. You guys get nervous when you come up here? I'm like, you know, I'm nervous for, you know, a lot of reasons because it's always, you know.
I just play the clip. We almost forgot. See, I'm so excited to have you on the show that I forget. Let's watch a clip from a trailer.
We watching the rest of the trailer? Is that what we're watching?
All right, this is for the trailer from Summer of Blood.
Oh, cooler's up.
Open it.
Oh, this is really pretty. What's the occasion? I mean, it's just, it's nice. I mean,
I'm asking you if you want to marry me.
Do you want to have dinner tonight?
No.
You're against marriage completely. You're totally against it.
It's not for everyone. It's not for me.
Yeah, cheers. I think that's a really healthy attitude.
All right.
That's a terrific healthy attitude. It's good, huh?
Do you realize you are fundamentally incapable of taking anything seriously?
You should probably stop eating so much bread, to be honest.
Money? It's all about money!
Thanks, appreciate it.
Before watching that trailer, I had totally forgotten just how many people you fuck in that movie.
Right, yeah. It's a fantasy. It's a kind of a fantasy movie. Really about fear of commitment and marriage for the most part, you know. But it also about an insecure guy who gets more confident as he gets bitten by a vampire and he can, you know, have any woman he wants. And his girlfriend asks him to marry him and he doesn't do that. So he can have anything that he wants. So then he has a choice to make, which is like the freedom to be with anyone he wants or the freedom of the actual what. Well, the beauty of what comes with commitment, so it's kind of a choice he has to make, and it's very zany and ridiculous and a complete fantasy, obviously. So,
really,
and it makes it, we might just get insecure. I mean, I'm so like, you know, scared about the whole thing about showing the movie, and it's like, you know, and with people with vampire films too. There's so many vampire films being made right now, and you've got that. I just ran into a guy on the street who just saw Jim Jarmusch's new movie, Lovers Left Alive. I haven't seen it, but supposedly it's really good, and he's telling me how great it is. And I'm like, oh, that's terrific, and I'm insecure about my movie. And then, of course, Dan, you come up on, I'm here and say, oh, yeah,
Lillian.
Woman Walks Home Alone at Night. Lillian, a Girl Walks Home. It's such a brilliant movie. It's black and white, Iranian, amazing movie. I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. I'm like, yeah, and I got my dumb vampire film that I'm showing. So, you know. But, I mean, I'm excited to show it. I'm just like.
And Martin Scorsese has a vampire movie is about to come out, too.
Does he really?
No, Spike not
Lee.
Really. No.
I'm, you know, Spike, it's good. Spike Lee's got a film coming out, but everyone's kind of down on Spike Lee, so it's like I'm it's okay that I'm, you know, at least with Spike Lee I'm maybe one step above possibly. So I like Spike Lee's earlier movies.
I think his Kickstarter kicked your ass.
Yeah, he did right. But I'm excited, but I'm just like really nervous. You haven't
done a Kickstarter, have you?
No, I never. I don't typically invest in Kickstarter because I usually any small amount of money that I have I put into my own movies. And so many people, I think Kickstarter is amazing and it's great, but so many people are doing it and I feel bad about selecting some movies to contribute to and others, not others. So I feel like I'll just not subscribe, not do anybody's movies. It's the same reason I don't wish happy. On Facebook, when someone has a happy birthday, I never say happy birthday on Facebook to anyone because I'd have to do it to everyone else, I think, sort of, in a way, you know? But then on my birthday, if, like, nobody says happy birthday, I feel bad, so I should maybe do, you know? So. But I'm excited. I'm just, it's just funny, because I want to get up here, I want to be confident, be like, but I'm, like, not at all. And, like, and I've been waiting, like, you know, I'm excited about showing the movie at Tribeca, and I'm like, this is great. This, I mean, in the broad scheme of things, it's not the most important thing in the world, but for me it is.
I think you should feel great. You came into this, into New York. I remember this around the time of Septian, right? Michael Tully's film. You were in the cast of that. and you moved. I remember that's how I met you. And then afterwards, you were telling me, oh, I'm thinking about moving. And the next thing you know, weeks later, you moved here. And you didn't have a lot of confidence about making such a big decision. You felt overwhelmed, which is understandable. I don't know how anybody moves to New York if you're not born here. I'm always impressed. And then now you've got a couple years later, you have a film at Tribeca. I'd say that's pretty relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a movie called Septian that played at Sundance in 2011, which was great because it gave me confidence to move here. And if anyone knows Michael Tully, he's the best person to know in New York. You come here and he took me to all these parties and introduced me to everyone. So having that, for bravado, to have someone there to introduce me to everyone was great. So it was great having the confidence to make a movie and be surrounded by all these amazing filmmakers and actors who are supporting each other's work. I mean, I get really insecure hearing about, being with all these great filmmakers who are here, hearing about other great work. It makes you want to do better work. It makes you competitive. But at the same time, there's such support here. Everyone really supports each other in terms of, emotionally watching the movies, giving feedback. But there's also a sense of, I want to do better work. I want to do something as good as the films that other people are making, But I'm excited, to be here. It's just as long as you're inspired and you have passion. I'd like to be able to make some money at this, but at the end of the day, I just don't want to lose the desire to keep doing it. You know what I mean? And when you're surrounded by people who want to do it, it's great. I'm going to keep rambling until you stop me.
So. I know.
Obviously,
you can see a certain references, and even in this, whether it's Lloyd Kaufman or.
Anybody know Lloyd Kaufman? He's got Troma films, B movies and whatnot. I sold actually a movie to Troma about 15 years ago, a vampire film that I made in my mid 20s. And I'm a big fan of trashy horror films, but I'm also a big fan of dialogue driven movies like by Whit Stillman and Woody Allen. So we wanted to make something that kind of merged the low budget sensibilities and trashy components of low budget horror films with something wacky and silly and slightly neurotic. Without comparing to Woody Allen, but I'm very influenced by his work. Another person that people are kind of not high on right now, but because of the things. So,
we're talking about the creative artistic part of his life.
Yeah, right. But it's funny because I just got cast in a movie by a director named Barrett Mader out in East Texas, and I'm playing a journalist who's investigating. It's part documentary, part narrative. I guess kind of like Catfish, if you've ever seen the movie Catfish, that kind of merges. There's a slippery line between what's real and what's fiction. And I'm playing a journalist who's investigating a possible sex rink that happened in East Texas that involves kindergarten and children. Six people went to prison for supposedly having a facility that actually had children that were having sex for adult entertainment. And all these children were planted with false memories. I'm not trying to make a comparison with the Woody Allen, what's going on, but I'm just saying it's really interesting that that's happening because it makes me think, because what I want to say is I want to think, hopefully, there was a false memory planted, I just don't want to, I want to shut it out of my head because it's like, I can't imagine he could be that much of a monster, and I just, I can't think, there's a Woody Allen-influenced monster movie right now, so maybe there's a lot of that stuff that's kind of with that. So it's like, I shouldn't be talking about any of this stuff. It's just terrible what happened, but at the same time, there's this sense of it crushes my love for his work, you know what I mean? And I don't want to...
While we're talking about, we should spend a little time talking about Summer of Blood, too. So, by the way, I'm going to be moderating a couple of your... Q&A's, it turns out.
Yeah, it'll be great. Next week on the 17th.
It
right, it'd be terrific.
17th, 18th.
17th, 18th, and I think the 24th and 26th the following weekend. I'll say this really quickly about the movie, because for me what's inspiring about it is that we wanted to focus more on the spontaneity of performance and less about craft. I mean, one of the reasons I get insecure is because there's so many great films that are really beautifully shot and really beautifully edited, and they're craft. They're just really wonderfully made movies, and we tried to make a movie that's produced fairly well, but we had such a tight schedule of 9 days. We wanted to focus more on we've got a decent script with pretty good dialogue, but we wanted to get really, really good performances. So we shot with two cameras, and we kept things very loose without being too committed to the script. We were very loose about being off book and improvising based on the script to try to get a very, very immediate, spontaneous performance out of all the actors. And I think everyone did a really good job. The cast, very proud of what the cast did, because there's an energy to the performances that I really like. And if you've ever seen the comedy, Rick Alverson's The Comedy, There's something about Tim Heidecker's performance in that movie that he, I'm not trying to compare, but I'm in every scene of the movie. We wanted the film to have a certain energy to keep people's interest. It was really important to feel like we were having fun while making it. I'm so sorry about talking about all that stuff before. That's just, that's...
part of the owner shtick is right. Apologizing. That's okay. We forgive you, Arner.
But it's great. Two cameras. We still have a two Canon 7D, two 5Ds. And we didn't have a lot of rehearsal time. We had our scripts, and I was rewriting the script as we shot, and the actors didn't really have time to learn their dialogue, and I didn't want them to commit to the dialogue verbatim. So we would get on set, we would read over the dialogue and the scenes really quickly, and then we would just kind of shoot and see what happened. And we wanted to explore kind of what was happening in the moment. And very little direction was given by me going into a scene. After we would shoot a scene, I would give notes to the actors. Actors would give notes to me because I was in the scenes. I wasn't able to direct myself. And some of the producers on set it was very communal. Everybody was giving feedback. And it was a beautiful, beautiful... I mean, I've done 6 movies, and my 4th movie was so terrible and horrible. And I lost a lot of confidence. I haven't really gotten it back since then. But it was such a terrible experience. And part of the reason why was because I storyboarded every scene. I tried to micromanage every beat, every moment, every gesticulation, every dialogue that came out. I wanted to, I tried to everything. I wanted to completely manipulate it. I wanted to know exactly what I wanted.
The god of your story, right?
And then when we couldn't pull it off, I didn't know how to break away from all my storyboards and all the things, this preconceived notion, this vision that I had. So now it's like the complete opposite. I want to get rid of any kind of sense of vision. I'm sorry to use that word, but I didn't want to have any sense of truly picture in my head of what it was going to be or how it was going to be or how it was going to feel. I just wanted to be in the moment and discover something new and fun. So,
are you able to watch it and enjoy it now, though?
I hate this movie now. I mean, I've watched it. Well, because you spend so much time, director. There's a moment, I think, most directors can attest to this, where you get to a point, you love your movie, but then you've watched it so many times, you see every imperfection, and you just think, what am I doing? I feel like a hack up here right now. It's like, if I'm watching my movie, I'm like, God, I'm just an asshole, and I just, why? What am I trying to do? What am I trying to prove? Starring and being in the movie and writing in the movie, I'm like, I don't want to be a movie star. I'm not trying to be,
What are you trying to do?
I have a good time. I mean, when it comes down to it, I am just trying to have fun, I'd like to find a way to make low-budget movies that can actually generate a profit. We wanted to make a movie with a really catchy title, Summer of Blood. There is a lot of blood in the movie, but it is ultimately a comedy. We wanted to make a vampire film that had the fangs and makeup and all that stuff. We got a really good special effects guy to do these amazing latex effects. We'd like to find a way to make some money at this. With Richard's Wedding, making a low budget comedy with no movie stars isn't viable at all. Making a moderately budgeted film with movie stars.
Heard some groans from the comedy filmmakers in the audience.
Also, there. I think Brian Wiseman's in the audience, right?
Yes,
here?
He is. Brian Wiseman.
He made a great movie called
About Sunny.
He made a great movie called About Sunny, and it is terrific. And I think that it's done well. But it's got Lauren Ambrose in it, and it's also a really terrific drama. But you would think that this movie also would be incredibly lucrative right off the bat. And it's been successful and it's been good. And I'm not singling you out as a non-success story. But it's like you would think.
Thank you.
This would do better.
Can I be your avatar?
When I heard the foreign, you would think that foreign territories, everybody know what foreign territory is? You sell to France, to Germany, to different places, you sell your movie to different places. I would think that all the territories would sell based on her being in the film, based on the fact that the movie is really, really good. And the fact that it hasn't, I don't think this isn't maligning the film. It's not, it's surprising to me. It's like, it's shocking to me. Yeah. So it's like, even if you have someone who is really well known, an incredibly great actress, it doesn't guarantee anything. And I'm like, well, let's see if we can try to make a movie for very little money that's good, somewhat the best quality we can make. Hopefully there's some viability there. That the New York Times article that was written by Manola
Dargis.
It's a very famous article now, right? Where she basically before Sundance said, don't buy movies. There's too many movies out there. Don't buy them.
To distributors.
To distributors. And she was speaking directly. I felt like her whole article was speaking directly to me and other filmmakers like us. Like, you assholes, stop making movies. You're making it worse. Not all of us.
Right.
Who are making low-budget films. Yeah. Stop making films. You're destroying the industry. And hey, industry, don't buy these movies. Which to me, fuck that. What I think Hollywood should do, it's true. I'm not trying to be Mr. Champion or whatever. I'm a loser. I don't have anything really to say. But here's what I mean. Instead of Captain America being released on 4,000 screens, You give the popular. I mean, release it on 3,500 screens. Take a chance on Brian's movie and Nathan Silver's movie. And
we have a lot of good filmmakers.
And all the filmmakers who are here, Desiree's movie, and like put them in like 100 theaters. Let them be out there for a month or two. Let the audience have something new. They will appreciate that. They'll go to the cinema and they'll start seeing those films. That to me is the. You know, she should. Is Manola a man or a woman?
It's a woman. She's a guy.
It's a guy.
And she's.
God bless her, should be, you know, championing and saying, look, there's more right. point because there are more movies, there's more points of view, there's better films made. There's a lot of bad stuff too, mine probably included, but there's also more good films made as a result of having the accessibility to this to the new equipment and making cheaper films. Anyway, I'm waiting for you to cut my mic. Don't feel sorry for my self-deprecation. It is there's truth to that, but you know, they say fake it till you make it act.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring up to the panel here Manola Dargis, everybody. Let's bring her up. Well, I'd love to do that at some point. Let's bring up Desiree Akhavan, though. Please. Come on up, Desiree. We'll show the, and then we'll show her clip.
Oh, shit.
Who spends $300 on a girder belt?
May I help you?
We're just looking.
Actually, yes. I'm looking for the grown-up underwear of a woman in charge of her sexuality and not afraid of change.
I've got that. This just came in from France.
It's a bit pink.
Well, why don't you try it on for yourself? Let me know what you need, and I'll get a room ready for you. I actually need to stock up on panties. My ex-girlfriend cut out most of mine, so I'm going to need more. What about bras? I don't wear those.
Why not?
I just don't have that much to work with, so it feels a little silly. You know, like when little girls carry purses. What's your name?
Shireen.
Shireen. You are a woman, and you have breasts, and there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah, I know. You deserve a sexy, supportive bra just like any other woman. Okay. You were with a woman for how long and she didn't help you find the right bra? A while.
It sounds like your ex. What's her name?
Maxine. Sounds like Maxine was destructive to your panties and your self-esteem.
I'm so sorry. Is this really necessary?
I'm fine. I just need underwear. Just because your breasts are small doesn't mean they're not legitimate. I know. It's okay to be angry.
Oh my god.
Let's try that on. You know, it's like I didn't think I deserved a bra because I don't see myself as a real woman.
Welcome, Desiree Akhavan.
Hi.
Thank you for sitting between me and Honor and Dan. The film premiered at correct me if I'm wrong, Sundance?
Yeah.
Okay, great. You were making a web series prior to this, right? Correct? It's called The Slope. Was that born from F to Seventh, by the way, or is that separate? Evolved from the F to Seventh web series? Separate, completely separate.
They're separate. F to Seventh came afterwards. So
okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
Ingrid Jungerman and I went to graduate school together. And we were dating at the time, and we were like, we started making shorts for homework, and then we started putting them online, and then it became this web series.
Okay.
So we did 16 episodes of that, and then she went on to make F the Seventh, and then I already had this screenplay that I was writing while we were doing the show, and I made it.
Okay, so.
Cinderella story.
So talk about how Sundance and how that little journey, like from making your first feature, and then it got into one of the top film festivals in the country, nay the world.
Yeah, we weren't expecting it.
They all say that.
No, we really weren't.
Of course.
We were on like plan F at that point. So we made the film. We shot it in June of last year, and we just, you know, did it. Is the term skin of our teeth? I always forget colloquialisms. My parents are immigrants.
It makes no sense. Unless somebody in here knows the epistemological.
I was going to say, like, skin of my back. I don't, anyway, we did it in New York, and we submitted a rough cut to Sundance. People are always like, what are the story? And the story is a programmer saw it and liked it and showed it to someone else.
Right.
Like, no beautiful story, but I wasn't expecting it, and it was a really exciting experience. And we were definitely the smallest dogs there. I felt it, and it was exciting to be there and be not, you know, super famous.
Did you bring your posse then with you, the whole team,
I guess? I brought the same posse I have with me today, my girlfriend. She keeps me showered in diamonds. So, yeah, it's a crazy rat posse, and my immigrant Iranian parents were there. They were horrified, but in a fun way.
So if you had to give a numerical value to how autobiographical appropriate behavior is, what number would you give it?
What's our scale here? It's like 1 to a million.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a million.
I was looking for a percentage point, so I guess 100.
Oh, percentage?
I'm sorry. I'm not a mathematician. I'm
clearly.
To borrow a line from someone I know.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think about that. I've never had that question of numerical value. You know,
if you prefer to draw a graph,
I brought some graphs with me today.
You're like in every frame, this is your story.
Well, just like all writing, you start with something that's really familiar. So I was going through a breakup, and I was living in Brooklyn, and I just was writing about things I knew. So in that respect, yeah, totally. It was inspired by things I was experiencing, and I was coming out to my – I had come out to my family like – maybe a year and a half earlier, and we were still experiencing like the awful growing pains that your poor, sad immigrant parents have after they sent you to private school, and they're like, you're a homo? It's awful. I wouldn't wish on anyone. So I was experiencing that, and I was thinking, like, well, how would this work in a comedy, and what could I do within my means? And I was starring in The Slope. I never saw myself as an actress, but I was starring in The Slope, and it was a really fun experience. And I wanted to do it again. And I was like, well, this is my one shot. Like, no one's going to cast me in a movie. So I might as well just shoot my wad, do it now. And that's how it came about. The experience, like, the actual stories in the film, no, didn't happen. That lingerie scene never happened. Everything is super heightened and a bit silly. Sure, but sure. That's my lens, and that's how I see the world. So, yeah, super personal, not autobiographical.
Well, you got the deadpan thing going real well. I mean,
thanks.
You really have a good deadpan style, I would say, you know, as do most of the... I'm sorry, I've forgotten the actress's name who plays...
Hallie Pfeiffer?
Maybe, yeah.
Is that Jules Pfeiffer's daughter?
Yes, it is.
Jules Pfeiffer's a famous New Yorker cartoonist.
We all know Jules Pfeiffer is.
Did he come to set it?
No, Jules did not come. To imagine like her 85-year-old dad coming and being like, hey, he's a great grip. Yeah. No, so Hallie and I grew up together. Nobody comes. That'd be funny, though. I don't know. My sets are really boring. I really wish I invited more celebrities not to be on the film, but just to hang out. Like, Keira Knightley did Craft Story. Well, that happened actually in film school. One time, James Franco was my, camera assistant.
Of course he was.
And I was like, of course. That's what you want him to do on set. No, Hallie and I grew up together, and she was my one friend growing up. Went to this awful, well, no, this lovely prep school. I hope they let me shoot there in the future. There's a great place called Horace Mann.
Too late.
Too late. Sorry. Take it back.
Jules Pfeiffer is who I really love. He's the old Jewish New Yorker who I really, really admire more than anyone else in the world. You know, he's
Orner yeah, no, is, I admire him, too. He was... Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say Orner is also a painter and illustrator, oh, so cool. He has that.
No, he's amazing. He's a great man. I remember I met him when I was 14. I was so intimidated because I knew he was famous, but I didn't know for what exactly. Like, I think I heard he illustrated The Phantom Tollbooth, and I had read it as a kid, and I was very excited, but not because I particularly, had a fond memory of that book, just because I knew he was famous.
My son literally finished that book, I think, this...
It is an amazing book. But I remember being so starstruck. I didn't know what to say. So I was like, I heard you adopted your second child. How was that? I was like 14 or 15 at the time, and we had the most awkward conversation. But no, he didn't come to set. But Hallie is an old friend, and I was really lucky to have her in the film because she's been a really successful actress since we graduated from high school.
Can you talk a little bit about what's happening with it now? Because it's still very early in the process. You had it at a bunch of festivals, I'm assuming. Are you still doing that?
Or? We haven't been to a festival since Sundance, but, you know,
what?
Purposely. Yeah.
Is that true? Why? Is that part of the plan, or is that something
you're... It's part of the plan. You know, it's really... I'm discovering a whole world of film festival politics I wasn't aware of before, which you're exposed to after you make a feature film. And, you know, we haven't done our European premiere yet, so it's like dating, but if you're the cuntiest bitch in the world... Sorry, can I not say that? Because it's awful. Like, if you're just, withholding...
Okay, coming from our earlier conversation, cunty bitches, it's okay.
If you're playing games, that's what I mean by the CB word. If you're a game player and you don't want to show your cards, you're just not the kind of dater I am, as my girlfriend can attest. I was like, let's move in together. I love you. My name's Desiree. So yeah, we have been holding off to wait for our European premiere, waiting to hear back from people, and it's just been playing our cards close to the chest, I guess. But we will definitely be at Frameline and Outfest and kind of learning as I go, and there are a lot of things I keep putting my foot in my mouth.
You look at your performance is amazing. When you were on set, were you nervous about like directing yourself, or did you get feedback from other people, other actors? Did you allow that? Did you want that?
No, I did not want feedback.
Yeah. I needed it. I had to have it. So
I find in my life I get a lot of feedback I don't want. So if there was any environment I could control, it was the 18 days I was on that set was going to be a very limited space of time I could be the boss. And I did not ask for any feedback. I had a producer that I trust, more than anyone in the world. And, every once in a while I'd pull her aside and be like, can we move on? I would just look at her and close in the eyes and be like, tell me we can move on. I'm not going to do it until you tell me we have it. And she said we'd have it or we don't. Let's go back. And she was the one voice of reason. And I relied heavily on my DP. I mean, I think you just have those key. I had those key people on set that I was like, all right, I can very specifically look at you. But being a woman, being an actress, being the director, I don't know if being a lady, I'm going to play the lady card. But being a lady on set, like I was really aware of who I could ask for help and where I wanted to draw some really strong boundaries.
How does being maybe less knowledgeable experience?
Yeah, that's not an insult to me. I'm totally inexperienced.
No.
I'm green.
I was trying to even think of a better word for it, but less. How does the inexperience?
Yeah.
How does that work to your advantage, if it does?
If it does, you don't know better. So you 110, you have no fear. I had no fear making this film. I didn't think we were going to go to Sundance, that we were going to play at my grandma's basement.
Of course.
Like, I was doing this because I was like, I never thought I'd be in a position to direct a feature film. I never thought I'd be in a position. And I was in the position because digital cameras were released and because you can make a movie for nothing. And I was just so excited to take advantage of that. I didn't see stakes. I didn't think it would be seen by a lot of people. I just thought I was going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And moving forward, I think it was funny. I was writing something the other day, and I was like, "Oh, that's gonna hurt our foreign sales opportunities." Like, I was just writing, and I was like, you're gonna have a real hard time, convincing that agency to let that actress play this role. And suddenly, I had this filter in my head that I didn't have before of like, well, how could I possibly monetize this writing? Like, that show was so perfect because we were together at the time, and it just made sense. We weren't people who went into this wanting to be co-directors. We were both at film school wanting to be directors. So we both had to move on and make the things we wanted to make on our own. And even if we were still dating, we'd be directing our own projects. And that was kind of a stepping stone for us. But, I hope she's happy for me. I'm very happy for her. And I'm so impressed by the work she does, consistently impressed.
Well said. I'm sure. I hope she's listening. And I want her back on the show, too. So.
Yeah, she's really gifted.
Yeah. I want to bring out our next panelist, Gillian Robespierre, who has a new film called Obvious Child. So much talent out there who are also trying to get their films made and produced and funded and into Sundance Film Festivals and Tribeca Film Festivals and Rooftop Film. How do you do that? How do you get to the
sex stuff?
Sex.
It's non-stop costume.
Putting sex in your movies?
No, just offering.
giving sex.
I'm one of those prostitutes in that documentary. Just offering it everywhere. No, I would say, Gil and I both went through IFP's Emerging Narratives Lab, which now has a new, I think now it's called like Emerging Storytellers. But it was a really great opportunity. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I went to film school at NYU for graduate school, and I met a lot of people there. I didn't end up making this film with them, but I made the projects that preceded it and that got me here with those people, and they became my network for a good time. What about you? How did you meet Liz, your producer?
At IFP. Hello. Okay, sorry, I keep on forgetting this. No, the microphones. I went to film school. I went to School of Visual Arts. Met a lot of amazing people there who are still my closest friends and collaborators. And I went to IFP with Des. Did we graduate the same year?
You're ahead of me one year.
Cool.
You're a senior.
I'm a senior.
I'm a lowly junior.
And I didn't have a producer at the time. I just kept on lying, saying that my producer was in the bathroom. And I went to a mixer, and that's how I found my producer, Elizabeth Holm. we just were shit-faced and said, you want to hang out? And we did. We actually did as friends. And then, it, you know, we decided to partner up. So that's how that happened.
Yeah.
And New York is just a great character.
Yeah, and I'll say for my DP, who also had shot Obvious Child, I had a good friend that is a production designer, and I met him doing a shoot like 8 years ago. I was a strip soup and he was a production designer, and we were talking about my movie, and I told him the list of DPs I was meeting with, and he was like, I would never work with any of them. And I was like, oh, well then, Bitchy McBitcherson, who would you work with? And he was like, if I was shooting tomorrow, I would do it definitely. Oh, my God, I just, like, lost his name with Chris Teague.
Whoa.
I was like, wait, Brian, brain fart. So with Chris Teague. And then he was so passionate about the fact that if he were shooting tomorrow, he would shoot with Chris Teague, that I met Chris that week and was blown away from the minute I met him. And ended up calling Liz, your producer, and just saying, like, just tell me it's okay and I'll hire him now. And she was like, he's fantastic. And it was a great experience.
I think so. It's a good question, by the way, back there. I think networking... It always sounds so superficial to use that term, but I think that's very true. I think it's, you make good connections, align yourself with talent.
I would say Alex Karpovsky. I heard him in a Q&A.
Get Alex Karpovsky.
Well, he said, you know, go get a badge to, like, Tribeca Film Fest or other festivals, the all-encompassing pass. Go to the parties, network, schmooze with people. Right. And, like, on our film, we had a few people who'd never worked on a film before, like, PA for us, and they were working on a movie with a crew of 7 people, and they were doing things they would never be able to do on a bigger set. We were having them do – and they were actually – I was asking for creative input. And go to Rooftop Films. I mean, tons of filmmakers go there. Go to Jillian's opening, your opening night or that weekend. It'll probably be an after party that you could probably sneak into, right? And then, and work the room and make connections that way. I mean, Rooftop is a great place to meet people. I met Alex Karpovsky at a party here in town, and we worked on 2 movies together after that just by talking and having a desire to do that, so...
We're going to take another round or two of questions. 1 second, Joanna. But I wanted to mention before I forget that this is the paper I so rudely was reading while you asked that question earlier. Dan, do you mind holding up that poster? There's a new movie coming out also, which I just saw, and the filmmakers are going to be and the actor from it are going to be on my podcast next week, called Blue Ruin, which premiered at Cannes, I think. But it's a really another outstanding indie film. Anyway, they gave us
That's
a bunch
a great
of these
poster.
Posters. So what we're going to do, oh, look at that. You could put it in a window then, right? Like and see it. I don't know why you'd want to do that. But anyway,
And Blue Ruin, incidentally, also, like Obvious Child, was a Rooftop Films grant winner.
Nice plug. Very good. So filmmakers, get Dan's number.
And if you guys haven't seen it yet, Blue Ruin really is amazingly good. I mean, it's one of the best, like, dark, fun thrillers of the last several years. It's really... we had shown Jeremy's film Murder Party, which is sort of a horror comedy, more along the line of Summer of Blood. But yeah, Blue Ruin is kind of like an early Coen Brothers. It's like a blood simple kind of really beautifully made, very clever, but also like genuinely terrifying thriller.
And he shot Jeremy, who directed Blue Ruin, also shot Septian too, right? Which we discussed earlier.
Yeah, he was the DP, the photographer of Septian.
So we have a bunch of these posters, and so what we'll do is give a bunch of them out to you guys, but what we'll say is if you can, thank you, Herbert, for coming up with these trivia questions, and then we'll get to the last questions. Number one, name 5, if you will write, yes, you can get a poster. I think we have enough, but we'll get a bunch. But, okay, so we'll have to get you guys paper or something, and when you can write your name, and we'll announce this. Okay, Blue Ruin, right, is the name of the movie. Name 5 other films with the word blue in the title. That's good. Don't go on your smartphones. Come on. Number 2, this is a second. Answer this one. Blue Ruin is influenced in part by movies like Peckinpah. That's true, I would say, right? Wouldn't you say it a little bit? Name the film he shot in Ireland. And then there's the answer, so I shouldn't read that part, right? Like I didn't know the name of this one. I did. Okay, number 3. In The Getaway, who plays the harmonica music on the soundtrack? Okay. Oh, there's a 4th question. What was the name of Stephen on the soundtrack to the film The Getaway, right?
Okay, is that huge difference.
The Getaway.
The original or the remake?
Who plays the harmonica?
The original. He's too old to talk about the... And as am I. And I forgot there was a remake. Getaway. Who directed that one?
Oh, The 70s Getaway.
The 70s Getaway with Steve McQueen in it?
Steve McQueen.
And Alan McGraw? Yeah. Okay. All right. What was the number four? What was the name of the? What was the name of the? The just shout out things, Desiree. What was the name of the Stephen King film from 1983? John Carpenter directed it. Okay, named after a car. That'll give away a few posters, I think. All right. So, we'll give you paper and you can write it down.
You have to answer all the questions correctly.
Was that the idea, to answer all of them, or just? It seems terribly easy. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a number of these posters if you really want a poster at this stage. We just want to win something, I know, for fuck's sake. After sitting through all this, you deserve. All right, so we only have a little bit. So write down as many of the answers, and we'll figure out who the rightful winner should be. Anyway, sticks around. What? Just, number one. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so real quick, because we have to be out of here in about 10 minutes. Number one, name five films that have the word blue in it. There are five that just came out the last week, I think, the title of Blue. And then number two is name the Peckinpah film that he shot in Ireland, which I see the connection to this film. And then number three, The Getaway, who played the harmonica on the soundtrack. And number four, what was the Stephen King film about the car, named after a car? Okay, so... I saw a hand, Joanna. You had a question, and then we'll try to let's try to do this quick so we get a couple more questions in, and then we'll. Desiree. Okay. The question was, when did you set boundaries, and when did you reach out for help? So.
I went into the film being pretty clear on what I knew would be my weak points. I mean, I was acting in it, so I knew I wouldn't be able to. I would watch one take to make sure the camera was right, but not really for content. I wasn't able to look for performance. So I depended heavily on my producer. Her name's Cecilia Frigiuele. She's UK-based, and the production company's UK-based. And they were all here for the shoot. And she was my eyes on monitor, but we went into the shoot knowing that. I was pretty clear on that. And also after meeting Chris Teague, the cinematographer we both worked with, I knew that he had studied directing, and he's a director and a writer as well, really talented. But his personality is so supportive and kind that he's not one of those douchey guys who's going to, you know, try to keep inserting his opinion everywhere, which is what you'll find with a lot of directors who shoot. So I felt really confident being able to look to him. But, you know, I would love to know if you have a more, like, specific example you're looking for, but I went in really clear on set with what I wanted, and I didn't, in terms of other people's feedback, and I didn't look outside of that. And people were really respectful of me, I feel like, in terms of giving me the space I needed and not noting me at all, because I was clear from the get-go what I wanted. I think going into your shoot with the intention of what you want to get from your day-to-day is important. It helped me a lot.
I don't know if you have any comments about that.
Yeah. Does anybody want to speak about IFP as a resource for filmmakers?
What was IFP? Did everybody know the Independent Filmmaker Project? It's a tremendous independent film resource here based in New York, Brooklyn specifically.
Well, I was encouraged actually by Rooftop to apply. And that sort of, you know, I owe a lot actually to Dan. Because Rooftop really, you know, encouraged me and Mark. Mark and Dan from Rooftop encouraged me to apply to IFP with a script. And they gave me about, like, the deadline was for 2 weeks, I think. They were like, the deadline's in 2 weeks, you could do it. And I'm like, no, I cannot. But I did. I wrote a script in 2 weeks. No one else knows that except everyone now does. A very early draft of Obvious Child was written in 2 weeks. Thank God it took, you know, I worked on it. Which allowed, you know, got me into Rooftop where I met my producer and where this sort of whole thing took off. But, you know, I have nothing but great feelings and encouragement for anyone who has a story and they don't really know what to do with it. You know, apply to this program because, so much happened once I started meeting people, and I'm sort of a shut-in, So it was also helpful for me to leave my house.
On a personal level.
On a personal level. To bathe and to, you know, do all those things. That...
Yeah, and I'll just clear up for anyone who doesn't know, the program that we were involved with, now the Emerging Storytellers Lab, is just for films at the script level. It's a one-week-long intensive for Independent Film Week.
You don't have to have any actors attached or money or anything. All you need is a...
hope and a dream. Whistle in your step.
And 92 pages.
Submissions are, they have submissions open right now.
April 15th, maybe.
So
there's still a couple of days.
So write a script in a couple of days.
But also, if you have a narrative or a documentary film and it's your first time as a director with a feature-length film, you can go to one of their labs or apply for one of their labs. So the labs are intensive week-long training for both narrative and documentary. What we did was only took place during film week, which is when you just do meeting after meeting after meeting that they schedule with New York industry types. And it was a really great step in the right direction for our film.
Yeah, it definitely taught me how to speak about it publicly and pitch. I mean, nothing came out of those pitches, but that's fine. But I learned how to speak about my own project, which I didn't have that, you know, that language down yet. So it was very, very helpful.
Yeah, IFP is in September, and Rooftop does, we co-present a screening of clips from all the lab films every September during IFP, so it's a free show. That's a great show, especially if you're new to New York and you're looking to meet filmmakers and people who are working on projects. It's a great show to just go to and just talk to everybody there, because it's like half the crowd is filmmakers who have works in production or are just finishing something up, so it's a good way to meet people, so definitely check it out.
Let's just also squeeze in before we call it a show here. Dan, you can find more about Rooftop Films at rooftopfilms.com, correct? Get on the good times.
That's, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all those things.
Yeah,
but yes, rooftopfilms.com.
Yeah, and get on their, you'll want to like the page and get on their feed and subscribe to the new. Right now is the perfect time if you don't do it, because obviously they're about to come out with a lot of new the schedule and lots of new information. And owner, tickets are right now. I know they're Amex card.
Yeah, anything on Sunday or Monday you can get them to the general public. And we're having Q&As after everything, and there's going to be a party after the first and third screening. If you have a ticket, you can go. It's like, you know, it's Tribeca is throwing it, but it's nice. It's great. And then so come out and it'll be a fun time, I think. I'm just debating whether or not in the red carpet, whatever the little thing they do, the photo thing, I thought about wearing like my contacts and fangs just to be a little zany.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I think it would probably be okay. You don't think you're shaking your head saying no way? You're saying no? No, I'm just trying to say no shirt. You're going to see me with no shirt in the movie if you see it. You're going to wish you hadn't. So it is a horror film.
It's also funny. So you can get, again, American Express card holders can buy tickets now, but Monday or Tuesday. It is. It's true. It is racist. But as of Monday or Tuesday, you can get tickets for Summer Blood and whatever other films they're happening.
Look, racism not coming from a place of hate. You know what I mean? Racism, you know what I mean? I think you can do. You can cut close to the bone, and it can be mad.
All right, Desiree.
It's like a B&H level racism.
Look, I mean, Summer Blood is a very sweet movie. At the end of the day, it's a very sweet movie. It's a romantic comedy.
I have to get out of this film, Charlie Roar. Sorry, Desiree, how do we find your movie and find out, keep updated on it?
Appropriate behavior. You should visit our website, appropriatebehaviormovie.com. That's it. Yeah, I'm getting the nod. Appropriatebehaviormovie.com, and you can like us on Facebook and you get all the news. And we'll definitely be in New York very soon.
And you'll come back on.
I will definitely be coming back on. I would not.
And she's also, by the way, because she dissed me about a month ago when I did a piece.
It was personal.
I did a piece right before Sundance, so maybe it's more than a month ago now, but I did a piece on the Brooklyn Filmmakers Collective, of which you're a member, and you couldn't make it to that, so that will make it up. Oh, this visit, of course, counts too. And then finally, Gillian Robespierre, your movie premieres here in New York in just a couple months, but how do we stay in touch with you?
We have a website, obvioustrialmovie.com. I believe the trailer. Why are you laughing? It's .com. The trailer is coming out on Tuesday.
Woohoo!
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad somebody else is the audience. We'll incorporate it into.
I can't wait.
We'll incorporate it into the edit of this. We'll get it in there. So we'll all be hanging out there for a little while longer. You just stop asking questions.
Yeah.
You'll be able to talk to everybody. Write down the trivia answers.
Well, you said they could, but
No, we have nothing but good questions. And it's true. But we have to wrap things up, so I can't take another question. But we'll stand around chatting for a while after this out by the bar. What was I going to say? Oh, well, thank you, everybody. And thank you, Dan Doxel, Orner Tukel, Desiree Octavon, and Gillian Rose here for putting on this. Thank you. Thank you, Videology.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Videology, for the spot.
So, you know, you can see the audio could use some work, and so you see what I mean by some audio problems there. But all in all, I think it went really well, and it certainly, as far as the live event itself, the audience seemed to have a really good time. And I think with a few minor tweaks, we can, you know, only improve the events going forward into the future. So do keep an ear out. We'll announce the next one soon. I think we're doing one a little later in the spring at the Northside Festival, but I have to confirm all that first. So if you could also just spread the word about the podcast, if you are a regular listener, if you could just go on Facebook, share the link, tweet about it, it's a tremendous help. You can get friends to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I'd be so indebted to you for doing that. And I've gone in there recently, and there's still, even though there's, I can see that a bunch of people recently have, in fact, reviewed it, given a star rating, you know, and left comments on the iTunes site. That's fantastic, and I thank you for that. And please continue. If you haven't done it, it only takes a few moments to go to iTunes and find the Filmworks Radio podcast, and then just click on a star that you think is appropriate. It's 1 through 5, I think. And, you know, it's just rate generously is my request. You know, coming up on the podcast, I have I recently did an interview with the great D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hedges. They have a new film in the works. It's called Unlocking the Cage, and I think there was a New York Times Magazine cover story on the subject that this documentary is going to be on. I haven't read it yet. I'm going to read it today, and I wouldn't be surprised, of course, if Pennebaker and Hedges are mentioned in the article. They must be. But it will tell you more about the subject of the film, which is there's a case in the courts right now, which is trying to give certain animals to be treated legally as a person. It sounds crazy, but basically that would mean they can't be locked up. They can't be put on, used as entertainment for experiments. You know, all that they have the right to live a natural life of their own, and that we cannot interfere in that. It would be an enormous step forward in terms of our relationship with animal kind. So Pennebaker and Hedges have made a documentary about this person who is this attorney. I believe he's, I may be wrong, but it's not right in front of me, but they've made a movie on this subject anyway, and they have, they're currently doing a Kickstarter. So it just happened all time out, and they invited me into their office, and I assume it's their home, to talk to them. So that will be coming up shortly in the next couple of weeks, so look for that. And how exciting to have on D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hedges on the show. Also, I'll be bringing on one of the founders of RealWorks. It's an organization that works with high school students, training them to be documentary filmmakers, and also they find mentors for them. So it's a terrific organization. And John Williams, who is a co-founder with his wife, will be on the program. And lastly, I've mentioned also, I'm bringing on Jamie Wilkinson, who is a founder of the company VHX, which gives filmmakers the ability and the infrastructure to sell their movie off their website. so to sort of self-distribute in that regard. All those folks are coming up, and many more in the coming weeks of Filmwax Radio. So let me just sign off here, and thank you for listening very much. I will be back later this week, I believe. I think we're going to be back later this week. If not, definitely next week with another episode. However, this is episode number 208 of Filmwax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Until next time.
Just to find out what you got.